Okay, welcome to lecture 14, where we are going to pick up and continue on discussing the discontinuous conduction mode of operation in these power electronics converters. On Friday, we left off after introducing this mode of operation using the buck converter as an example. What we showed is that as we continue decreasing the average inductor current, eventually we reach a point where the ripple solved for the converter would tend to try to reverse the polarity of the inductor current. Using a diode in our boost converter, which can only conduct current in one direction, as we decrease the average value of the inductor current to such an extent that the ripple would cause the inductor current to go negative, instead of actually going negative, the diode will be passively shut off and will enter a new mode of operation in the converter. In this discontinuous conduction mode of operation, instead of just our two switching intervals, we have one with the MOSFET on and one with the diode on. Instead, we have three periods of conduction, the MOSFET on, the diode on, and then a third period where neither of the two semiconductor devices are on. We looked at when this mode of operation would occur, and we did so using kind of a proof by contradiction approach. We said, let's use the expressions that we solved before for the average inductor current and the ripple on that current, and solve for the point where the ripple becomes equal to or greater than the average value. At that point, if the ripple is exactly equal to the average value, our minimum inductor current should be exactly zero. If the ripple becomes any greater or if the average current becomes any lower, the inductor current would want to go negative. It cannot because of this diode, and then we'd be in DCM. So using our buck converter as an example, we plugged in, actually solve for this inequality, where we say we're in CCM as long as the average value is greater than the ripple. If we plug in expressions for the average value and the ripple, we end up with an inequality which tells us when we're in CCM, it's violated when we're in this discontinuous conduction mode. By convention, we define what's on the left here, this 2L over RTS, as some parameter K, a characteristic of the converter design. This K depends on converter parameters. L, TS, and R. And it somewhat makes sense that it depends on these three things. Our inductance, L, if that decreases, then we should have higher ripple in the converter. TS, the switching frequency. If our period gets longer, we'll have kind of the same slope on the inductor current during each interval, so the amount of ripple would get larger. So both of these two really determine delta IL, the inductor current ripple. R, on the other hand, really determines the average value, IL. Our load resistance is dictating how much power will be flowing through this converter. As the amount of power goes up, we'll have to have higher inductor current to reach that higher power. What we have on the right here in this expression is some function of the duty cycle, some function of our control variable D. Okay. This function will vary for the different converters. It was D prime for the buck converter, but for the boost, the buck boost, juke, sepig for other converters, it'll be some different expression unique to that converter, whereas K will always be this 2L over RTS. At the end of class on Friday, we solved for this expression where we had a K being greater than K crit. That's one way to evaluate whether or not the converter is in DCM. The other thing we can do is define some R crit, the critical resistance at which the converter will go into discontinuous conduction mode. To do that, we really just take this expression, multiply both sides by R, divide both sides by D prime, and then we'll get an expression that looks like 2L over D prime TS greater than R, where this on the left is now our crit. And R crit really tells us the same thing that K and K crit does, but it's perhaps a little bit more convenient because now it's in terms of a load resistance. We can think of as the load varies, here's the point at which this converter will go into DCM. Okay. In the book, in table 5.1, these K crits and R crits are solved for different base topologies, the buck boost and buck boost. These are useful to help determine, is it possible to design the converter over a given load range so that it will stay in CCM or so that it will always be in DCM? How does this all play out? So one way to think of this is, because K depends on these fixed parameters at a given load, we can think of K as some fixed value. Similarly, we can think of R as some fixed parameter for a given mode of operation, for a given operating point for the converter. And then this K crit of D or R crit of D will tell us when, as a function of D, does DCM occur. Okay, taking the buck converter as our example, what we just solved is that our K crit of D is just D prime, 1 minus D. So if I plotted that, my K crit versus D, be quite simple, going from 0 to 1, my K crit will go from 1 to 0. It would look something like this. Now, based on the converter design, I could have different values of K. This K is equal to 2L over RTS. So if I design the converter, for example, with a very big L, very small TS, I could get very small ripple. I could put K somewhere up here so that the converter always operates in CCM for this fixed load resistance R. Okay. If I relax my constraints, let L be a little bit smaller, let the switching frequency be a little bit slower, I might design it somewhere down here, where now I have CCM operation from some duty cycle, looks like about 0.5 and up, and then DCM 0.5 and below. Now keep in mind, this is 2L over RTS, and I'm taking that as a fix, so I'm really talking about a single load resistance. As the load resistance begins to change, this curve will shift. If I talk about wanting to regulate at zero load, saying I have zero output power, but I still want to be able to regulate my output voltage, P out going to zero really looks like R going to infinity. That'll make my K here become very small, and my converter will operate in DCM. Qualitatively, this makes sense. If I have zero power, I should have zero average current in my inductor, but the ripple is still there. So everything will go into DCM at light load. Okay. Now, from here, what we'd like to do is go on and analyze the converter operation once it is in this discontinuous conduction mode. And one of the key things that we've done previously for CCM is finding the converter conversion ratio, V over VG is equal to M. In CCM, assuming a lossless converter, we could solve this purely in terms of the duty cycle, just our control variable. In DCM, this M is going to be a function of both the control variable D and this K, our parameter, which really describes the tendency of the converter to go into the discontinuous conduction mode. What we're going to find is that the analysis has changed slightly, but the main principles still apply. Okay. So we're still going to use inductor volt-second balance and capacitor charge balance. Both of these still apply because the only assumption that we used to derive volt-second and cap charge balance was that we were in steady state. That is, we assumed IL of TS was equal to IL of 0, VC of TS is equal to VC of 0, meaning that our inductor currents and capacitor voltages start and end at the same value across one period, so the converter has reached steady state. If this is violated, we're we're no longer in steady state, in some kind of a transient condition. So this is still going to be true even when operating in DCM. We're still going to arrive in a steady state where each period looks identical to the one before it. Okay. What is going to change slightly is that the small ripple approximation sometimes applies. Clearly in this buck converter example, when we have a delta I greater than its average value, small ripple approximation is not going to be a good approximation to apply. However, in the buck converter example, we can still apply it to the output voltage, assuming we have a capacitor large enough such that that output voltage remains more or less constant. We have some ripple on it, but if that ripple is a small percentage of the DC value, we can still apply small ripple approximation to the capacitor voltage. For the inductor current, we're not going to be able to. We're going to have to find a new way to satisfy our capacitor charge balance. And we're going to do so by directly taking the average value of the inductor current rather than approximating it as a DC. So when you're solving these converters in DCM, use care in applying the small ripple approximation. Don't apply it to anything where the ripple is actually quite large in comparison to the DC value. So if we move on here, we can analyze this buck converter in the discontinuous conduction mode and a very similar manner to the way we've done previously. Instead of two subintervals, we now have three subintervals. The first, subinterval 1, is where the MOSFET is on. Subinterval 2, the diode is on. And then subinterval 3, we have nothing on. Both the MOSFET and the diode are off. And subinterval 1 and 2 are going to look just like they did in CCM. The difference is that now the ripple is so large that we have this passive switching action when the diode current goes to zero. So when this diode current begins ramping down and eventually hits zero, the diode will shut off of its own accord. It's not a controlled switching action. We control the duration of the time that the MOSFET is on, and then the sections of the period split by subinterval 2 and 3 are passive. Whenever the current hits zero, the diode shuts off. Subinterval 3, we have both the MOSFET and diode on, and we just sit there with zero current in the inductor until eventually we start the next period and the MOSFET turns back on. So to analyze these, we'll break the converter up into these three equivalent circuits during the switching intervals and look at voltages on inductors, currents, and capacitors in preparation for applying volt-second balance and cap charge balance. So these three subintervals, 1, 2, and 3, and in each we want to look at voltages on the inductor, currents, and the capacitor. So in subinterval 1, here in this circuit, what we're going to find is that our voltage on the inductor is equal to, in this case, VG minus the output voltage, right? VG minus V of T. And small ripple approximation is still going to apply to the output voltage. We can still assume that this is a regulated DC value with a small ripple. So I'll say this is approximately VG minus V here. Small ripple analysis still applies. Now looking at the capacitor current in this interval, S of C is going to be, well, in this case, it's just I sub L minus V over R. And applying small ripple to the output voltage, I'll get minus V over R. But for the inductor current, I can no longer apply small ripple analysis. Because we're in this DCM mode of operation, the ripple is in fact quite large, I'm going to have to leave this as I sub L of T. So small ripple applies here and here, here. Small ripple analysis no longer applies. So those are my two equations for subinterval 1. As I move into subinterval 2, the MOSFET shuts off. The diode begins conducting the inductor current. my equations are going to change slightly. My voltage on the inductor is now equal to 0 on the left, V of t on the right, 0 minus V of t. Again, small ripple applies to V of t, so this is going to look like minus capital V. My capacitor current, I sub C, is equal to the exact same thing here. Since none of these switching actions have affected the behavior at this node, we'll still have IL of t minus V of t over R, with small ripple applying only to the output voltage. In subinterval 3, now my inductor current ramps down to the point where my diode, which was conducting in subinterval 2, passively shuts off. This happens when the current here, ID or IL, since they're in series, goes to 0. Now, once that current hits 0, the diode shuts off, and there is no semiconductor conducting. So the inductor has no path to flow any current. Current hits 0, and it's going to stay there throughout this interval. Now, understanding this is important for solving the voltage on the inductor. Okay? The inductor current starts this interval at 0, and because there's no path, it has to stay there. So what I know inherently is that there cannot be any voltage on the inductor. If there was any voltage on it, it would develop some kind of a current. So I know that VL has to be 0. Equivalently, if IL is 0, the voltage on the left of the inductor has to be equal to the voltage on the right of the inductor. It means that the voltage here, I call this V1. V1 is equal to V of t during this interval. Must be true. Otherwise, we would need somewhere for that current to flow that'll develop as we apply a voltage to the inductor. So VL must be 0 on this inductor. As we look at I sub C, really my arguments from before still apply. At this node here, as I do a KCL, I've got my IL and my V of t over R. And I can write this as IL of t minus V of t over R. Now, IL of t has gone to 0. So writing it in here really doesn't change the equation. The actual value of the current will just be minus V of t over R because IL is 0. However, it doesn't hurt me to leave it in there, and it will make things a little bit easier when I go to average this. Leaving that in there, my capacitor current is just going to be IL minus V over R in all three states, and I can not worry about this different duty cycles multiplying these values of capacitor current. So leaving it, I have still IL of T and small ripple applying to my output voltage. So now with these equations, what I'd like to do is apply my voltage and balance and my cap charge to balance to them. So hopping over to the next slide here, I can first plot them, and then what I'm going to be looking for is the average current in the capacitor to go to 0 and the average voltage on the inductor to go to 0. What I'm going to plot is the voltage and current in the inductor, not the capacitor current, and we'll see why in a moment. So during this DCM mode of operation, I now have these three different subintervals per switching period. So my time goes from 0 to TS. I'm going to have an interval where the MOSFET is conducting, an interval where the diode is conducting, and then an interval where nothing is conducting. By convention, I'm going to label these times D1 TS, D2 TS, and D3 TS. So now instead of one duty cycle and a D prime, which is the rest of the period, I have three different duty cycles, D1, D2, and D3. And of course, T D1 plus D2 plus D3 is equal to 1, because jointly these three duty cycles make up the entire switching period. So using my solution from before, I can plot the inductor voltage. It was Vg minus V in subinterval 1, minus V in subinterval 2, and 0 in subinterval 3. So this will look like Vg minus V, minus V, and then 0 at the end of my period. So if I want to apply volt-second balance to this, my equation is going to be that the average voltage on the inductor is 0. And from my equations, that's equal to D1 times Vg minus V plus D2 times minus V plus D3 times 0. Okay, so nothing really new here except for the three subintervals. I can rearrange my equation to group together terms of Vg and V. I'll have D1 Vg minus V times D1 plus D2, and I have this 0 multiplying D3, so it'll drop out. And now I can rearrange to get my conversion ratio, V over Vg, which is equal to just D1 over D1 plus D2. So this will be the result of my volt-second balance. This will be one of two equations which will define the converter operation. Next, what we're going to do is apply the cap charge balance. So my average capacitor current is going to be equal to, well, this one is a little bit different now. I've got in all three intervals, IL of T minus V over R, but IL of T is no longer some DC value. I can't just say IL of T times D1 plus IL of T times D2, because IL of T is varying. It's not some constant value. So what I'm going to have to do is actually say that the average capacitor current is still 0, but that looks like the average of this expression, IL of T minus V over R dt. So here's my direct definition of an average. So to find what this is, what I'm going to do is plot the inductor current on my bottom plot here, and I'll graphically take that average by integrating the area underneath the curve. So if I look at IL of T, it's going to start at zero current, and I know this because it's going to end at zero current in D3, where there is, during the entire interval, zero inductor current. So starting from zero, my current is going to ramp up in this D1 interval, and it's going to do so with a slope of Vg minus V over L, voltage applied to the inductor over its inductance. In subinterval 2, it's going to be sloping down with minus V over L as its slope. Okay. And I'm going to define this point here as I peak, some value yet to be found, but it'll aid us in solving this. Okay. So going back to my equation here, minus V over R, where small ripple applied, that's some constant in time. So I can break that out of this integral. It'll be minus V over R times TS when I integrate it. 1 over TS will cancel that out. And what I'll get is that the average value of the capacitor current equals 0. And that's equal to 1 over TS. So integral from 0 to TS of IL of T dt minus V over R. Rearranging, this is going to look like V over R is equal to this integral here, which is just the average value of IL Okay. Find that average value of IL. What I need to do is look at the area under the curve here for the inductor current, divide that by TS, that gives me the average value over one switching period. Okay. Here comes where I have some use in defining this parameter I peak. So I can define my average inductor current as quite simply 1 over TS times the area of two triangles. Triangle on the left here and the triangle on the right. My formula for the area of a triangle is 1/2 base times height. So this area is going to look like 1/2 D1 TS, the base of the triangle on the left, times I peak, its height, plus 1/2 D2 TS, I peak, which is the area of the triangle on the right here. So now the only thing left to do is to solve what this I peak is and plug it in. I'm going to do that on the next slide here. I peak is going to be slope times time in this first interval. I could define it slope times time in the second interval as well. I'll just use the first interval here and say I peak is Vg minus V over L times D1 Ts. So my I peak is Vg minus V over L times D1 Ts. And my equation now is V over R is equal to 1 over Ts times 1/2 D1 Ts I peak plus 1/2 D2 Ts I peak. Okay, I can begin canceling things before I plug in. I'm going to have a Ts that cancels here, and I can pull out my 1/2 D1 plus D2. And this will look like V over R is equal to 1/2 D1 plus D2 times I peak. I peak is now G minus V over L times D1 TS. Okay. And now this is my second equation defining the converter operation. This is telling me how my load current relates to my average inductor current. In the case of the buck, they're the same. The difference from CCM is that this average inductor current is a little bit more involved than it was previously. I can take these two equations here and here and now plug them together to eliminate D2 and solve for a conversion ratio of the converter. That's done here from the book. My M is now a function of the duty cycle D1 and this parameter K, which talks about the propensity of the converter to go into DCM. We like to eliminate D2 and express things in terms of D1 because D1 is our controlled duty cycle. D1 is the amount of time that the MOSFET is on, which we're actively controlling with the pulse width modulation scheme. D2 and D3, those depend on really the converter itself. They're divided by this passive turnoff of the diode. So it's a little bit easier and more helpful in terms of designing control loops to define everything in terms of the control variable, D1. Okay. So by plugging these two equations together, eliminating D2, what we end up with is the conversion ratio here. Next slide, I plot that conversion ratio for varying values of K. So on the y-axis is our conversion ratio M, the x-axis is D. This line here is our CCM line. M is equal to D. And what we see is for varying values of K, this conversion ratio curve could change significantly. For K is greater than 1, there's no change at all. Looking back previously, that's what we showed here. If K is greater than 1, then K is always greater than K crit, and for that load resistance will be in CCM always. For smaller values of K, what we find is that during part of the period will be in this DCM mode of operation. So as an example, for K is equal to 0.5, our complete conversion ratio versus duty cycle curve would look like this, where for D less than about 1/2, we're in DCM. For D greater than about 1/2, we're in CCM. And at this single point, we're in this CRM or boundary conduction mode of operation. So you see now there's this discontinuity in the derivatives, but the conversion ratio itself is still continuous. And this must be so because at this single point, the equations for DCM and CCM still apply. It's right at the boundary. To plot the entire conversion ratio across the full range of D, now we have to have some piecewise function here. For K is less than K crit, we'll be in DCM. For K greater than K crit, we'll be in CCM, and we'll have two different equations depending on which mode of operation we're in. And these two will be continuous at the boundary when K is equal to K crit. Okay. As K becomes smaller and smaller, we move towards curves up here where we're in DCM for almost the entire range of duty cycles. Everything less than about 0.99, we're in DCM. Okay. The buck converter itself will always be in CCM at D is equal to 1. So D is equal to 1, the MOSFET's always on, and all we have is an LC filter. There's no switching ripple left when D is equal to 1. So it'll be in CCM at that boundary, but with a very small value of K, every point other than the D is equal to 1 will be DCM operation. Now, I'd like to move on and do an example of the boost converter. I'm applying these same steps to solve the boundary for DCM operation and the conversion ratio for the boost converter. Okay. So we've previously solved expressions for the average inductor current and the ripple on the inductor current weeks ago in the course. And we know now that this converter is going to be in CCM operation when the ripple is less than the average value, and DCM operation when our solved ripple is greater than the average value. Keeping in mind that both of these things, both of these expressions, won't apply in DCM. So if we solve and say the ripple is greater than the average value, well, in fact, our expression for ripple and average value are no longer valid because we're not in the CCM mode of operation anymore. Okay? But taking these to solve our boundary, we could say is for CCM, I is greater than IL. That's going to look like EG over D prime squared R is greater than EG over 2L DTS. And we're again going to rearrange so that we have all parameters in terms of duty cycle on the right and all of the converter parameters that are fixed on the left. This EG will cancel on both sides. I'm going to multiply by 2L and divide by TS, and then I'm going to multiply by D prime squared on the left and the right. What I'll get is 2L over RTS greater than D times D prime squared. So you see again, our parameter K shows up, and now we have a new K crit for the boost converter, still a function of the duty cycle. But a different function in this case. This expression is a little bit more interesting than what we saw before. On the right, what I'm plotting is K crit of D, which is this D prime squared times D as a function of D. What we see is that this has this curve shape where it first increases and then decreases and is zero at both ends. Whether D is zero or D prime is zero, the product of the two becomes zero. that means is that we can possibly, for example, if I designed a K somewhere in this region, operate so that I have CCM operation both here and here, the DCM operation in the middle here. And what that would do is really allow our converter to operate in CCM for extreme values of the conversion ratio for the boost converter, either very high voltage or voltage very close to one, and DCM for a large middle range of voltages. I can, once again, design this thing with a different K somewhere up here, K that is greater than the maximum of this K crit curve. And if I do that, the converter will operate in CCM always. But again, remember that K is 2L over RTS. So at very light load, R is going to become very large, so K will become very small. So this parameter K really talks about a single load. And as we vary load, K will vary with it. So we won't be able to design this converter, regardless of what it's doing, so that it's always in CCM for varying output power. To analyze the conversion ratio of the boost converter, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to split it up and look at the three different subintervals. In subinterval 1, where I have the MOSFET conducting, subinterval 2 with the diode, subinterval 3 with nothing conducting. Hopping into these three subintervals, we again look at the voltage on the inductor, VL, and the current in the capacitor, I sub C, in each. Subinterval 1, the voltage on the inductor is just VG. In subinterval 2, it's going to be VG minus V of T. And small ripple is going to apply to the output voltage. So we'll get VG minus V. In subinterval 3, again, because the inductor current has reached 0 and it needs to stay there for the duration of subinterval 3, my voltage on the inductor is going to be 0. It means that I have to have VG here. For the capacitor current in subinterval 1, it's going to look like minus V of T over R. Small ripple is going to apply, so this will be minus V over R. Subinterval 2, it's going to be the inductor current minus V over R. With small ripple applying only to the output voltage, not to the inductor current. So this will become I of T minus V over R. And in subinterval 3, since the diode here has now shut off, the inductor current does not make it to the capacitor, and the capacitor current is again going to be minus V of T over R, which is about minus V over R, with small ripple applying to the output voltage. Similarly, we can take these now and plot them. For my inductor voltage, it's going to be VG, then VG minus V, then 0. So the plot is going to look very similar. VG, VG minus V, 0. And my inductor current is going to ramp up the slope of VG over L, ramp down with the slope of VG minus V over L, and then hold at 0 through the end of the period. This TS. So I've got my D1 TS interval, my D2 TS interval and my D3 TS interval. Applying volt second balance, the average value of my inductor voltage is equal to zero. That's equal to D1 times VG plus D2 times VG minus V plus D3 times zero. So my D3 times zero will go away. I can collect terms. Zero is equal to VG times D1 plus D2 plus D2 times minus V. If I want to solve for something like V over VG, that's going to look like, in this case, I'll move D2 times V over to the left, divide by VG, I'll get D1 plus D2 over D2 as I divide it over. So a similar equation to what we found in the buck, now just flipped. Okay. Now as I do my cap charge balance, I sub C, that's equal to the average current in the capacitor. And the average current in the capacitor had this minus V over R term always, but it had the inductor current only during subinterval 2. So looking at our plot of inductor current, it has non-zero value in subinterval 1, but that value is not flowing through to the output. That's just circulating here through the MOSFET, building up current so that we can have the boost step up voltage do its job. So the inductor current only flows through to the output, through the output capacitor in subinterval 2. That means is that as I do this averaging of capacitor current, what I'm going to have is minus V over R always plus the average of the inductor current just during subinterval 2. So integral from D1 to TS to D1 plus D2 TS of IL of T dt. If I look at that, the inductor current during subinterval 2 is the diode current. This is the interval where the diode is conducting. During all of subinterval 2, the diode current is the inductor current. So I can replace this expression with the average value of the diode current because the two are the same. The inductor current during subinterval 2 is the diode current. Okay? And this makes some sense just looking at the output stage here, where I could say, in general, the average of the capacitor current is equal to the average of the diode current minus average of. So this is just a KCL at this node taking the average values. So inherently true, whether everything to the left is a boost converter or some other circuit. The average of the current coming in has to be the average of the current going out. And that's what I'm going to apply when I say that this is equal to zero during my cap charge balance. Okay. So to solve this, all I have to do is figure out the average value of the diode current. That's going to be 1 over TS times this amount of charge here given by this area. This area I can again solve as 1/2 base times height of this triangle, and then plug in for IP to get an expression for it. So doing that, what I'm going to get is average capacitor current is equal to zero. That's equal to minus V over R plus the average of this diode current waveform. The average of that is going to look like 1/2 base times height, where the base is D2 TS and the height is I peak. I peak, I can solve for as either the slope during interval 1 times its time or the slope during interval 2 times its time. I'm going to use interval 1 just because it's going to be a little bit simpler. I won't have this subtraction of v. So I'll say that I peak is equal to this slope during interval 1, vg over L times d1ts. And I have missed here that this needs a 1 over ts, because the average value of the diode current is that area divided by ts. So if I peak is this, I can plug this in. Average value of IC is equal to 0. And that's equal to minus V over R plus 1 over TS times 1 half D2 TS times I peak, which is VG over L D1 TS. And I can cancel one of my TSs internally, and then I'll just have to leave the other one. I'm going to rewrite this. Now, instead of saying it's equal to 0, I'll subtract minus V over R over to the left and get V over R is equal to D1, D2, VG, TS over 2L. Okay, so I've once again gotten two equations, one from my cap charge balance, one from my volt second balance. Both relate the converter operational parameters, principally this output voltage V, to duty cycle and fixed characteristics such as input voltage, inductance, and the switching period. If I, again, plug these two together, eliminating D2, what I'll get is a quadratic equation, which I solve using the quadratic formula to find my conversion ratio M. In this case, because it's a quadratic equation, I'll get two roots, positive and negative. I'm going to select the positive root because I know that the boost converter should be in non-inverting topology. My output voltage should be positive. There's no way to get a negative voltage out of this boost converter. So taking the positive root here, I have my conversion ratio, now a function of both my control parameter D1 and the design of my converter given by K. Okay. Again, plotting this, I have here is my CCM boundary, which is a conversion ratio of 1 over D prime. And then for varying values of K, I'll get a different portion of the possible duty cycles D over which the converter operates in CCM or DCM. As we showed previously, there's actually two intersection points if my K is somewhere so that I will operate in DCM. Both of these would now be CRM type operation. Critical conduction mode at the boundary between CCM and DCM. But the converter will operate in DCM in between these two. So DCM here, CCM down here, and CCM up here for any given one of these curves. If I look at the K is equal to 0.1 case, my full M of D, my full conversion ratio versus duty cycle, would look like this. Okay. So table 5.2, similar to table 5.1, lists these basic characteristics for the three main topologies, buck boost and buck boost, the principal PWM topologies. It repeats K crit, but also gives you what the conversion ratio is in DCM as a function of D1 and K. It also tells you how to solve D2 based on D1 and K. So if D1 is my control, this table lets me solve D2. And D3 is equal to 1 minus D1 minus D2. So now I have the length of all three intervals during my switching period. Okay. And then for reference, it also lists the CCM conversion ratio as we've solved previously. On homeworks, on exams, on other things in this course, don't feel the need to re-derive things which are listed in the book. If I ask for some characteristics of a buck boost converter operating in DCM, you can start from what you got from the table and then move on with the solution from there. No need to re-derive these. All right, with that, we've gone through and finished chapter 5, and there's two slides here, a summary of what we've been talking about in chapter 5. This one shows a plot, just plotting these characteristics from the previous table, the DCM conversion ratio versus duty cycle for the three main topologies. The reason I included this here is for a key point, the actual conversion ratio of the converter always follows the characteristic having the larger magnitude. So if I have some M of D in CCM, some M of D comma K in DCM, and I plot both of those, for any given duty cycle, the one which applies is the larger one. So for example, we saw in the boost converter that the conversion ratio in CCM looked like this. My DCM conversion ratio kind of looked like this, and I knew that I was in DCM in this interval and CCM out here because the one that actually applies is the larger of the two. Where this comes from is exactly how we figured out DCM versus CCM before. This is really solving the same thing as saying when K is greater than K crit, we're in DCM. Just turns out that applying this to the conversion ratio, the larger one is always the valid answer of the two. So in fact, if this is my K, this section is not valid. I'm actually in DCM, so the CCM solution in that area does not apply. And then final points here from this chapter. So this discontinuous conduction mode fundamentally occurs because of the use of either current or voltage bidirectional switches. Current or voltage unidirectional switches. If I have a four quadrant switch, I'll never have DCM because that four quadrant switch, if the current changes polarity, it doesn't care. The diode being a current unidirectional switch, when the current tries to change polarity, it will shut off and we'll have this uncontrolled switching action. This can happen in either inductor current or capacitor voltage. The examples we looked at in this lecture were both inductor current for the boost converter and the buck converter. In both of these, this one makes a little more sense to look at. They could also happen in a boost converter if the output voltage ripple is so large that it reverses polarity. But if we're designing this as a DC to DC converter, definitely we don't want the output voltage to have 100% ripple. We probably need it to have 1, 2% ripple or less. So that design is a bit of a fabricated one. But in something like the Chuck converter, where there's a capacitor in the middle, it's not holding the output voltage, it's just holding some internal voltage across it. It's very possible for that voltage to switch polarities and cause a switch to passively shut off due to a change in voltage polarity. Okay. The conditions for going into DCM can be found by just looking at the ripple and comparing it to the average value. If the ripple is greater than the average, I've got a change in polarity, and then depending on the switches I have, that may cause some change in operation. So really just looking at currents or voltages, whether they change polarity. The conversion ratio is different from what it is in CCM, but it can be found by the exact same thing we've done before. So volt second balance and capacitor charge balance, these principles still apply. The only difference is that now we may or may not be able to apply small ripple analysis. We have to be somewhat selective when applying small ripple approximation. Some components it will apply to, some it may not. Fundamentally, though, inductor volt second and cap charge balance, the integral form of those equations still applies. The only difference is evaluating that integral. Rather than applying small ripple analysis, we now had to actually graphically solve the integral of these inductor currents. characteristics of the converter changes significantly. Mainly, the output voltage becomes load dependent. So this M of D has the parameter K in it. K depends on R. It means that our output voltage is no longer exclusively a function of the duty cycle. It depends on what the load resistance is. That's going to require additional control. We found the same thing when we started applying losses in the converter, that in the ideal case, the buck converter conversion ratio is D, but if we have different resistances in there, different switching losses, then all of a sudden the conversion ratio becomes more complex and it varies with load, because the efficiency varies with load. This is motivation of the need for a control system. If these converters worked as ideal, if I wanted 6 volts from a 12 volt input in a buck, I could just set D is equal to 0.5 and never touch it again. But because of the non-idealities, because of things like DCM and because of different loss mechanisms, even if we just want a fixed output voltage from a fixed input, the duty cycle is going to change over time. So we're going to need a closed loop control to regulate that output voltage, which we'll begin looking at in the coming weeks of the course. Okay. So that'll end this remote lecture. We'll have another remote lecture on Wednesday, and I'll be back in class on Friday lecturing in person. Thanks.